Wondery Plus subscribers can binge new seasons of American Scandal early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. It's November 2009 in Boston, Massachusetts. Inside a courthouse near the waterfront, a crowd of defendants and lawyers files into a courtroom waiting for their cases to be heard. One of the defendants, Leonardo Johnson, takes a seat in the gallery. Johnson is a middle-aged man and wears a thin mustache above his lip. And although he used to be poor and addicted to drugs, today he's dressed in his nicest outfit, ready to make a good impression on the judge and jury. Johnson knows that that shouldn't be an issue. All he has to do is sit in the witness box and tell the truth. After that, there's no way a jury will find him guilty. He'll finally be exonerated, and Johnson will walk out of the court a free man. Soon, the judge raps her gavel and calls for the next case. Johnson hears his name, and together with his lawyer, he heads forward to the defense table. It's time to put this nightmare behind him. After Johnson is sworn in, his lawyer turns to address the court. Your Honor, members of the jury, we have a rather unusual case here. And if we want to understand what happened and why Leonardo Johnson should leave this courtroom a free man, we need to go back to the beginning. So, Mr. Johnson, if you would, please tell the court your story. Johnson leans forward as he looks out at the jury. Of course. Well, it was a few months ago. I'd fallen on some hard times, and I needed money badly. Mr. Johnson, what was so urgent that day? Well, I'll be honest, I used to use drugs. I was addicted to crack cocaine. And that day, I needed money because I was planning to buy some more. And what happened? Well, to get some money, I decided to sell something. Mr. Johnson, what did you decide to sell? It was a piece of a cashew. A few people in the back of the court break out in surprised chuckles, but Johnson's lawyer presses forward. You said a piece of a cashew, like the nut, is that correct? Yes, like the nut. I found it in my carpet. And Mr. Johnson, what exactly were you hoping to acquire by selling a fragment of a cashew? Well, in case people aren't familiar, a little piece of cashew like that looks just like a rock of crack cocaine. And crack users, when they're high, they can't spot the difference. So I found a guy, an addict, and I tried to sell him the cashew. But the man you tried to sell it to, he wasn't really an addict, was he? Johnson pauses, shaking his head. No, he wasn't. He turned out to be an undercover police officer. I'm going to regret that moment for the rest of my life. But what I keep trying to understand is all these days I spent waiting in jail for this trial, for today, I sold a piece of food I found on my carpet. And that's not a crime, is it? Johnson's lawyer pauses as he lets the question sink in. After wrapping up his testimony, Johnson and his lawyer return to the defendant's table. Johnson feels good about his case. His story is so bizarre, so improbable, there's no way a jury is going to convict him. He has to be telling the truth, and the evidence itself is irrefutable. When Johnson was arrested, the police did seize a small piece of cashew. Only a magician could somehow convince a jury that Johnson sold an actual drug. Soon, Johnson's lawyer calls up the next witness, the analyst who works at the state's drug testing lab. Johnson turns to see a short woman with long black hair approaching. When she's sworn in, she introduces herself. Her name is Annie Ducan, and she's the chemist who tested the sample seized during Johnson's arrest. Johnson's lawyer jumps in with the most obvious question, asking Ducan whether in her examination she discovered that the sample from Johnson was in fact a cashew. Ducan pauses. And then with a straight face, she tells the courtroom that it wasn't. The sample was crack cocaine. Both Johnson and his lawyer stare at Ducan stunned. And after Johnson's lawyer repeats the question, Ducan reminds the court that she's a trained chemist. She doesn't have a single doubt about her results. Johnson can't believe what he's hearing. It's outrageous. But even worse, Johnson now realizes he doesn't stand a chance. It's his testimony versus a state chemist. As a former drug user, there's no way the jury's going to believe him. Johnson sinks down into his seat, feeling hopeless and defeated. His case has fallen apart. And while he doesn't know why Annie Ducan has lied, it really doesn't matter. Soon, he's going to end up in prison.
American Scandal is sponsored by Audible. I get the thrill of, say, skydiving, but it's a lot of work and expense for something that lasts only minutes and comes with some safety concerns. Instead, I get my thrills in a lower dose, stretched out over hours with a good mystery. Like in the Penguin modern classic Perfume, The Story of a Murderer by Patrick Susskind. And as an Audible member, I can choose one title every month to keep forever from the entire catalog of classics, bestsellers, new releases, and Audible originals, ready to listen whenever, wherever on the Audible app. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. That's audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. American Scandal is sponsored by True Green. This is a true story. Right now, fertilizer is spilled all over my garage, and the fertilizer spreader has lost a wheel. While I'm usually pretty DIY, some things I leave to professionals. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to a beautiful lawn. You water and mow, they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. So you do you and let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. From Wondery, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is American Scandal. By all appearances, Annie Dukan led a happy life. She'd grown to be the star chemist at a state lab in Boston, testing drugs seized from alleged criminals. Before she arrived, the lab had been drowning in a backlog of work. But with her seemingly impossible productivity, Dukan kept the lab afloat. She was deemed a superwoman, earning praise from many of her colleagues and supervisors. But Dukan increasingly had to spend long hours testifying in court about her work. And with her time stretched thin, Dukan's production began to drop, and she started to panic. She began dry labbing her work, listing results without running actual tests. In so doing, Dukan managed to keep her numbers high, but increasingly, her colleagues at the lab suspected foul play. And as they began digging into her work, they realized that something had to be done. This is episode 2, The Logbook. It's late 2009 at the Hinton State Laboratory in Boston. Annie Dukan is sitting at her lab bench, arranging plastic baggies filled with a white powder. She opens one of the baggies and scoops out some of the powder onto a glass slide. And after dropping some acid onto the sample, she watches as blue flakes appear. Dukan smiles. With this result, she knows the powder is cocaine, and she can quickly move on to the next sample. But still, it's going to be a long night. She has a large batch of samples she needs to test. And while normally she would dry lab some of the samples, just jotting down results that match the police's expectations, tonight that's not an option. The police don't have any idea what these drugs might be, so Dukan has to go through one by one and test them all. Dukan is about to move on to the next sample when she hears a ding from her computer. She glances at the screen and finds an email from another chemist. The subject is alarming. No drugs found. Dukan clicks and begins reading. It has to do with a case she handled just yesterday. The police arrested a notorious cocaine dealer and handed over samples to the lab. Dukan had been in a hurry, so instead of testing each of the samples, she dry labbed them, declaring they were all cocaine. Then she sent a portion of the samples to another chemist who ran the powder through a second round of tests. It was all standard procedure. But the second test was run using advanced equipment. And according to this email, that test didn't find any drugs in the sample. The powder was inert. Dukan knows this sometimes happens. Dealers add powdered milk or baking soda to bulk up their product, so they often have bags of mystery powder just sitting around. And during the raid, the police might mistakenly see something that's not any legal drug.
But if that's the case, Dukan could be in big trouble. She claimed that she tested the samples and found that they were all cocaine. But the other chemist is now asking her to run the test again. And if she does an actual test, instead of guessing the results, she'll reveal that there was something seriously wrong with her first round of work. Dukan knows she could claim that this was an innocent mistake, that some samples got cross-contaminated, but that too would be an embarrassment, and it could invite additional scrutiny of her work. That's something Dukan wants to avoid at all costs. Dukan looks around the lab, straining to find a solution. That's when her eyes fall on the white powder she just tested, the sample that turned bright blue. This sample is cocaine. Dukan just ran a test to prove it, and that means it could be the answer to all her problems. She could take this sample, which she knows is cocaine, and perform a swab. She would submit it to her colleague, pretending that it's what she sampled the other day for the other case. It's a desperate gamble. And if anyone went back and tested the original stockpile, the supply that turned out to be inert, Dukan would be caught. She'd lose her job. She could even be charged with a crime. But her colleague needs an answer soon, so there's no time to think of another solution. Dukan grabs one of the test tubes. Then, taking a deep breath, she sprinkles in some of the white powder she knows is cocaine. Dukan pushes back her chair and starts walking the sample over to the other chemist. She smiles casually, making it seem like the retest is no big deal. She hands over the sample. Her colleague thanks her. Dukan walks back to her desk, trying to seem relaxed and unbothered, but inside her mind is churning. She's done plenty of dry labbing, listing results for tests she did not perform. But Dukan has never deliberately changed the outcome of a test, turning a negative result into a positive. And while she's struggling to accept the consequences of this action, part of her knows it was inevitable. She's already in too deep. And at this point, she has to do whatever it takes to avoid getting caught. It's early January 2010 at the Hinton State Drug Lab in Boston. The lab supervisor, Charles Salamy, is sitting in his office working on a grant proposal when he hears a knock on his door. He looks up to find Elizabeth O'Brien, an evidence officer with pale blonde hair. Normally, O'Brien is all smiles, but today she looks bothered, and that makes Salamy uneasy. As an evidence officer, it's O'Brien's job to check drug samples in and out of the lab safe. It's all part of an effort to ensure the integrity of the lab's criminal evidence, making sure drug samples haven't been tampered with, so the entire lab could have a problem. O'Brien sits down, and sure enough, she explains that she's troubled by something. It involves Annie Dukan, the lab's star chemist. O'Brien explains that she doesn't trust Dukan's work. Her testing rate is through the roof compared to other chemists. And while that should be a cause to celebrate, O'Brien fears that Dukan might be rushing and making mistakes. Salamy grimaces as he listens to the concerns. O'Brien is right. Dukan is the lab's star chemist, a workhorse who never stops producing. Without her, the drug lab would be drowning in samples. The police chief, the mayor, even the governor would be breathing down their necks. So maybe, hopefully, there's a more benign explanation. Salamy gently reminds O'Brien that Dukan has faced a lot of personal stress lately. She did have another miscarriage. And if her numbers are a little high, then that probably means she's sinking all her energy into work. There's nothing suspect about that. It's just how she copes. But O'Brien shakes her head. She reminds Salamy that he himself once said the chemist should test no more than 350 samples per month. That's the maximum that anyone can process if they want to maintain accurate results. But last year, Dukan tested 900 samples a month, almost three times the maximum amount. And that was even with the Supreme Court ruling, which forced staff to testify in court about their work, taking up valuable time. Everyone else's numbers dropped, but Dukan's barely took a hit. Something doesn't add up. Salamy's mouth goes dry as he absorbs the details. 900 samples does seem too good to be true. So he asks O'Brien whether she's sure about Dukan's numbers. Was she really averaging 900 a month? O'Brien nods solemnly. She's certain. She's never seen such a wide discrepancy in production between staff. With a grave expression, Salamy thanks her and says he'll look into the matter. But O'Brien remains seated. She makes another announcement. She wants to take the matter to Salamy's boss, Julie Nassif. Salome shakes his head, saying, "That's not necessary. They don't need to turn this into something bigger than it actually is. He'll figure it out one way or the other." But O'Brien insists that they raise the issue with the lab's senior managers. If Dukan is making mistakes, the entire lab's reputation is at risk, and court cases could be in jeopardy. As the lab's supervisor, Nassif should be alerted as soon as possible. Salome doesn't want a mess on his hands. Any disruption to Annie Dukan's work could set the lab back, leading to a spike in the backlog. Dukan is single-handedly keeping the lab above water. But O'Brien won't relent, so Salome agrees. He'll talk to Nassif. He'll do it first thing tomorrow. O'Brien is finally satisfied and gets up and leaves the office. Sitting alone, Salome stares out the window at the falling snow. O'Brien might be right. 900 samples a month is alarmingly high. He knows he has to confront Dukan, but somehow, without upsetting her. Several weeks later, Annie Dukan finishes some paperwork and gets ready to head home. It's been another productive day at the drug testing lab, and Dukan is excited to finally spend some time playing with her son. But just as Dukan is wrapping up, the door to her lab station opens, and she turns to find her boss, Charles Salome, standing in the doorway. In his hands is a stack of papers.
"Hey, Annie, how's my rock star doing?"
"I'm okay, Charles. What's going on? It's late in the day. I was hoping to take off in just a minute."
"Oh, me too, but this can't wait."
"Oh, okay. Well, come in." Salome grabs a chair. As he sits down, Dukan notices that her boss seems off. His skin is pale, and he has bags under his eyes, like he hasn't been sleeping.
"Look, Annie, I have not been looking forward to this conversation. And there's no easy way to put it, but there have been concerns raised about your work."
"What about it? I'm the fastest person here, even with all the time I have to spend going to court."
"Well, Annie, that is actually the issue. People have been talking about your speed and how many samples you test."
"Oh, what's the problem? My speed is the reason we've been gaining on the entire backlog."
"I realize that. We both know you're a great chemist, but some concerns have been raised."
"By who? Who's complaining?" Salome shifts in his seat, avoiding eye contact with Dukan.
"No, it doesn't matter who, but upper management wanted to be absolutely certain that nothing was wrong. They have to protect the reputation of the lab. I know you understand. And so even though I didn't want to, and I promise I really didn't, I was forced to audit your work. I've been going over your forms from the last month, and I put it all together in this report here."
Dukan freezes in panic as her boss slides a report across her desk. She knows there's a lot she's done that could get her fired or even thrown in prison. She thought she'd covered her tracks. But if her boss retested some of her samples, he might be able to put two and two together.
"Annie. Hey, you look like you've seen a ghost. You okay?"
I'm not sure what to say."
"Well, don't say anything. And you don't have to read the report, because I'll tell you what I found."
"Okay, look. There were a few instances where you didn't calibrate things as carefully as you should have. And I do want to go over those. But Annie, yeah, you're still a rock star, so don't worry. Take a look." Salome reaches out and flips open the report. And for the next few minutes, he pages through each of the printouts, which highlight some of her mistakes. But it quickly becomes apparent Salome is only accusing her of minor infractions. And not only that, he only audited her paperwork. He didn't retest a single one of her samples. There's no way he's aware of what she's done. Soon, Salome wraps up the discussion. And while Dukan wants to celebrate, she makes sure to look chastened, keeping her eyes downcast. She apologizes to her boss for slipping up a few times and putting him in this position. She says she knows that, like everyone, he's got a plate that's more than full. Salome smiles, accepting the apology, but reminding her she can't get sloppy. Dukan needs to remember to work both quickly and accurately. But knowing her skill, Salome is sure that won't be an issue going forward. Then he rises, pats Dukan on the shoulder, and steps out of the lab station. Dukan is alone once again. Her heart is pounding, and she feels dizzy from the emotional whiplash. But only one thing matters. No one suspects a thing. A moment later, Dukan grabs her keys and heads for the door. She's taking off early, and that won't be a problem, because today she learned a valuable lesson. As long as the paperwork looks good and the higher-ups stay happy, no one, will ever ask too many questions.
American Scandal is sponsored by the new masterpiece series, Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office. Following one of the greatest miscarriages of justice in British legal history, the new masterpiece series, Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office, is based on the shocking true story of the British Post Office scandal. When money started to seemingly disappear from local branches, the government-owned post office wrongly blamed their own managers for its apparent loss. And for more than a decade, hundreds were accused of theft and fraud. Many were even sent to prison, leaving lives, marriages, and reputations in ruins. But the issue was actually caused by errors in the post office's own computer system, something it denied for years. Don't miss Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office, starring Toby Jones, beginning Sunday, April 7th on Masterpiece on PBS. The series will be available to stream on the PBS app, PBS Masterpiece Prime Video Channel, and PBS.org.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great-tasting, high-quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
It's a December morning in Boston in 2010. Inside the Hinton State Drug Lab, a chemist named Michael Lawler hunches over his lab bench, hard at work. Or at least Lawler hopes it looks like he's working, because the truth is, right now, he's waiting, keeping an eye on the office, hoping that his boss, Charles Salamy, will soon walk by. Lawler lingers, fighting the rising feeling of antsiness, when suddenly Salamy heads through the lab on his way to the break room. This is what Lawler has been waiting for. He sets down a pipette, removes his goggles, and strips off his gloves. A minute later, he enters the break room and sidles up next to his boss. Lawler is a senior chemist, and he wishes he didn't have to ambush his boss like this. But it's been hard for him to find time with Salamy, and he badly needs to have a conversation about something that has him worried. So Lawler approaches the coffee pot, and lowering his voice, he tells Salamy that he wants to chat about Annie Dukan. His boss looks up from his own cup of coffee, raising an eyebrow. For Lawler, this conversation is uncomfortable, but he has to speak candidly. He cares about the lab, and the consequences of doing nothing are too great. So keeping his voice low, Lawler asks if they could go somewhere a little more private, like a conference room. Salamy looks impatient, like he doesn't want to have this conversation. But he agrees, and a moment later, the two step into a quiet space. As soon as Lawler closes the door behind them, he explains what's on his mind. He's been tallying everyone's testing numbers for the year, and Annie Dukan's numbers seem ridiculously high. Salamy takes a sip of coffee, and to Lawler's surprise, he says he's already heard this. He agrees that Dukan sometimes rushes things, at times she's gotten sloppy. But, Salamy explains, he's performed an audit of her work, and overall, everything looked just fine. Hearing this, Lawler shakes his head in protest. He's a senior chemist, a leader in the lab. If Dukan was merely rushing her work, he'd talk to her directly. That's not the problem. The issue, Lawler says, is that it seems like something much more sinister is at play. Lawler worries Dukan is committing fraud. At the word fraud, Lawler sees Salamy's whole body go rigid. He knows he's just made a serious accusation, and against the superstar of the office. By all accounts, upper management seems to love Annie Dukan, their most productive chemist by far. With his brows furrowed, Salamy tells Lawler that if he's going to raise those kinds of grave possibilities, he better have proof. Lawler wavers for a moment and admits he only has circumstantial evidence, but it is still deeply concerning. Dukan is testing 5 times as many samples as the average chemist in the lab. She's hitting those high numbers despite having missed the equivalent of a month of work for court days. By that math alone, there is no way Dukan could be performing all the tests she claims to be. So there's only one explanation. She's dry labbing, guessing the results for tests she never actually runs. Hearing the accusation, Salamy's nostrils flare. He tells Lawler that he audited Dukan, and that's the end of the conversation. He's not going to smear the lab's top chemist just because of some allegations. Salome then pushes past Lawler and leaves the conference room. Standing alone, Lawler's face grows flushed. This is maddening. Salome is one of the leaders of the lab, and yet he has blinders on. It's the most blatant kind of confirmation bias, something a scientist should be trained to overcome. But Salome is too invested in believing that nothing is amiss with his superstar chemist. Part of Lawler thinks he should let it go, because even if Salome is looking away from a concerning problem, he is right. Lawler doesn't have any proof of wrongdoing. But the more Lawler thinks about it, the more he can't let it go. If Dukan is faking test results, she could be putting innocent people in prison. It's unacceptable. So if upper management needs proof before they'll intervene, then Lawler will just have to find it. It's a few months later, in a windy spring evening in Boston. Across the street from the Hinton Drug Lab, Michael Lawler sits in his car, waiting with the lights off. He stares out the windows, watching the last few workers trickle out through the lab's front door. It's been a while since Lawler himself walked out, but he knows he has to be patient, because he needs to make sure everyone has left the lab before sneaking back inside. Finally, Lawler sees the windows of the lab go dark. He waits a couple more minutes, and then he peers over the dashboard and surveys the parking lot. It's empty. And that means it's time to head back in so he can find evidence proving Annie Dukan is committing a crime. Lawler steps out of his car and hurries across the street. And when he steps inside the lab, he finds the hallway dark, lit by only a few security lights. But Lawler doesn't want to turn on the overheads and risk being seen. So he stalks through the lab in the shadows like a thief. Soon he approaches room 326 and opens the door. Straight ahead is Annie Dukan's lab bench. Lawler gazes around at the lab station. Beside her desk, Dukan has pictures of her son. There's also a half-eaten bag of chocolate. Nothing looks out of the ordinary. But Lawler knows there has to be something, something he can take to upper management as proof of her wrongdoings. So he begins snooping around. Lawler heads over to the supply closet where Dukan keeps the chemicals used for testing drugs. Peering inside, Lawler begins picking up bottles, holding them up to the dim light. It's strange. If Dukan really is running all the tests she claims, she should be low on several chemicals. But every bottle seems nearly full. It's almost as though Dukan is hardly using any chemicals at all. For a moment, Lawler feels thrilled. This could be it. The evidence that Dukan isn't doing required tests. But after thinking it through, Lawler is less certain. Dukan could have recently got a set of new supplies, or she could claim that in her own defense. Lawler knows he needs stronger evidence. His eyes drift towards Dukan's discard bin. Each chemist in the lab has one. After running tests, the chemists are supposed to throw their used glass slides into their plastic bins and move on to their next tests. Based on Dukan's testing numbers, her discard bin should be overflowing. But when Lawler picks it up, all he hears is a quiet tinkling of glass. He removes the lid and looks inside. What he sees makes his heart pound. The bin is mostly empty. So if this is all Dukan has thrown away, she really must be dry labbing and barely running a single test at all. Lawler places the bin back down, his hands shaking. Then he takes one final glance around the lab station, making sure he hasn't disturbed anything. He can't let Annie Dukan know he was here, because he's going to have to come back and check again on both the chemicals and slides. Several weeks later, Michael Lawler sits down with an official who represents the Union for Chemists. Lawler, himself a senior chemist at Annie Dukan's lab, has been looking forward to this meeting for days. He's continued sneaking into Dukan's lab station and taking note of her chemical supply and the glass slides in her discard bin. At this point, the evidence is clear. There's no chance that Dukan is running all the tests she claims to be running, which is exactly why Lawler called this meeting. He does not have faith that managers at the Hinton lab will do anything to stop Dukan, so he's going to try and convince a union official to look into the matter himself and hopefully take some kind of meaningful action. As the meeting begins, the union official adjusts his tie and shoots Lawler a look of curiosity. Mr. Lawler, thank you for contacting me. It's always good to meet with one of our top chemists, but I'm not exactly sure what we're doing here. Can you fill me in? Yeah, of course. And thank you for meeting me. I know this doesn't happen every day, but I felt the need to mention my concerns about someone at my lab. Her name is Annie Dukan, and
and I have reason to believe she's committing fraud. Fraud? You're talking about someone who's responsible for testing drugs? Yeah. Andy Dukan is actually something. Well, she's a star at Hinton. She has the highest testing numbers of any of the chemists, by far. But I've gathered some strong evidence proving she's not actually running the tests.
Oh, I see. But Mr. Lawler, that's a big accusation. Are you sure? Are you spending your entire day watching her work?
No, I can't afford to do that. I've got my own tests to run.
So what is the proof?
Well, like I said, her testing numbers are far, far above anyone else's. But if you look at her supplies, things don't add up. Her chemical bottles sit unused. Her discard bin is empty, which you think is proof that she's not actually running tests.
That's exactly the conclusion I came to.
The official pauses, biting his lip.
Mr. Lawler, are you telling me that you've been going through this woman's lab station?
Yes.
Yeah, but I haven't disturbed or taken anything. I've just made observations.
And you have not reported this to your boss?
I've tried, but he won't listen. I think he's protecting her.
Okay. One more question. Is Annie Dukan a member of the union?
I think so. Why?
I ask because if she is, I'm obligated to warn you. You can't defame her and jeopardize her employment.
At this sudden turn, Lawler is taken aback.
I'm not defaming her. I'm telling you, there's a very high likelihood she's committing fraud.
So you say?
Yes, so I say. But if I'm right, and I think I am, she could be sending innocent people to jail.
Again, Mr. Lawler, remember that you are speaking to a representative of the union. And I need to remind you that hearsay like this could damage her career.
It's not hearsay. I've seen it with my own eyes.
After snooping around in her office without her permission.
Lawler shakes his head. He can't believe what he's hearing.
Look, I came to you because someone needs to take action, and so far no one at the lab will do anything.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Lawler, but I'm not going to be able to help you. If she's a member of the union, then it's my duty to protect her legal rights. Beyond that, I can't take sides, and I hope you understand.
The official rises, and without saying another word, he walks away. Lawler sits back, stunned. For a few minutes, he doesn't know what to do. No one even seems to care that innocent people could be going to prison, all because of a reckless chemist. It's enough to make Lawler feel hopeless. He's talked to his boss, and now he's talked to the union. And still, despite all of his warnings, Annie Dukan will be able to keep working, or not working. For a moment, Lawler considers calling in sick to work. He's not sure he can face the lab right now. But then, he remembers who he is. Lawler is a scientist, and if there's one thing he knows how to do, it's gather data. So he'll keep watching Annie Dukan, keep gathering evidence of her fraud. And if there's ever a chance to reveal her crimes to the world, Lawler we'll be ready.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
It's June 16th, 2011 in Boston.
Inside the Hinton Drug Lab's evidence office, a large metal door swings open and Elizabeth O'Brien enters. The evidence office looks like any other office. There are desks and computers, and some of the staff have pinned up their personal memorabilia. But it does have one unusual feature, a giant walk-in safe. And as supervisor of this room, O'Brien's entire job revolves around that safe and everything inside it. Drugs like heroin, cocaine, and ecstasy, evidence that was seized from alleged criminals, which needs to be tested. Because these samples are all considered criminal evidence, they have to be meticulously tracked and stored. It's the only way to avoid mix-ups or any kind of tampering. And that's why access to the safe is also tightly controlled, and why O'Brien needs to make sure the safe is locked up. As she finishes securing the safe, there's a knock on the door. O'Brien turns and sees a junior evidence officer.
Hey, Elizabeth, can we talk for a second?
Yeah, of course. Everything all right?
I'm having issues with the database. I'm trying to finalize some records from 2 days ago, but something's not making sense.
Oh? What's going on?
That's weird. In the computer system, there's one part of these records that's always blank. The name of the chemist who checked out the samples and tested them.
Oh, yeah, that. We've had issues with the database.
But that's not the biggest problem. I mean, I can do things manually and just look at the card the chemist had to fill out. It would be easier if the name just showed up in the computer system like it's supposed to.
Yes, of course. And I'm sorry about the extra work.
Which chemist is showing up blank?
Annie Dukan?
As soon as O'Brien hears the name Annie Dukan, she frowns. Last year, she pushed her boss, Charles Salamy, to investigate Dukan. She'd been alarmed by how quickly the chemist was churning through samples. And while Salamy conducted an audit, as far as O'Brien could tell, it was superficial and didn't actually exonerate Dukan at all. So a few moments later, O'Brien pulls up the database and begins poking around. But after a few minutes, she can't tell whether the blank spaces are just a glitch in the system or something else. So O'Brien does a little more digging. She gets up and checks the evidence logbook near the walk-in safe. If Dukan checked out a drug sample, it should be noted in the ledger, along with initials from an evidence officer. But what O'Brien discovers makes her uneasy. She finds the batch Dukan was potentially working with. At least that's what the database indicates. It involves 90 drug samples. But when she looks at the ledger, she finds there's no signature from an evidence officer. And that means there's no official record that Dukan checked out the samples. O'Brien grows increasingly alarmed. It's possible this is just a bureaucratic mistake, that Annie Dukan didn't actually get access to the drugs. She couldn't have without authorization from an evidence officer. But O'Brien can't be sure. So she takes out her keys from her pocket and heads over to the walk-in safe. O'Brien unlocks it, and when she arrives at the shelf where the drugs should be located, she finds it's completely empty. The sight takes her breath away. Somehow, drugs got out of the safe and into Annie Dukan's hands without any evidence officer being aware of it. It's a serious breach of protocol. O'Brien isn't sure what's going on, but she does know she needs to tell her supervisor, Charles Salamy. They need to get to the bottom of this. 5 days later, Annie Dukan sits down at her desk and fires up her computer. It's the start of the day and Dukan is feeling refreshed, ready to make quick progress on all the drug samples waiting for her. But just as she's about to start working, she notices an email from her supervisor, Charles Salamy. It was sent late yesterday, after she left the lab. Apparently, it's something urgent. Salamy wants to talk about some drug samples that weren't properly signed out. He wants to meet first thing. As she rereads the email, Dukan's palms grow hot and sweaty. She knows this is bad news. She has to think fast. The truth is, Dukan committed a serious breach. Anytime you check out a sample for testing, it's supposed to be approved and noted by an evidence officer. But the whole process can be slow and laborious. When Dukan finishes with a batch of samples, she wants to start on the next batch immediately. It's a way to save time. But sometimes the evidence officers are at lunch or have gone home for the night, and they can't sign out the samples. These kind of hiccups slow her down, so Dukan has come up with a shortcut. She's been taking samples without permission. In her mind, there's nothing wrong with what she's doing. It's more efficient. But the evidence officers are strict about the whereabouts of drugs. And if they find out she's been taking samples without authorization, it could mean a serious reprimand, maybe even a suspension.
Dukan reads Salome's email again, trying to figure out a solution. The big issue seems to be the missing initials in the logbook. It's a matter of paperwork. And then Dukan realizes there's an easy and straightforward solution. Dukan looks around the lab. It's still early in the morning, and no one else is here. So Dukan hurries over to the evidence office. As she steps into the empty room, she spots the evidence logbook waiting in the open. Dukan picks it up and begins flipping through to the prior week. That was the last time she remembers taking samples without approval. And that day, all the other samples were signed out with the initials GP, short for Gloria Phillips, one of the evidence officers. For a moment, Dukan studies the looping letters G and P on the page. Her heart begins to race as she realizes what she needs to do. She doesn't hesitate. Dukan grabs a nearby pen, and then she starts copying the initials into the blank spaces, one after the other, making it seem like Dukan did get approval to remove the drugs, and that once again, the paperwork proves there's no reason for anyone to be worried. An hour later, Elizabeth O'Brien steps into the evidence office at Hinton Lab. O'Brien looks up at the clock. In 20 minutes, she's going to be meeting with Andy Dukan. O'Brien isn't looking forward to a confrontation, but she has to figure out what's going on. How Dukan managed to check out 90 samples of drugs without permission. Getting those answers is crucial. If Dukan broke protocol, the lab's integrity could be tarnished. There could be accusations of evidence tampering, and that could affect the outcome of court cases and real lives. O'Brien grabs the evidence logbook, which demonstrates that Dukan somehow got the drug samples without authorization from an evidence officer. But as O'Brien reviews the ledger, her eyes go wide. There, in a series of previously empty spaces, are now the initials G and P. O'Brien stares in disbelief. These boxes, she knows, were blank just yesterday. This doesn't make any sense. O'Brien tries to think through the possibilities. Maybe the evidence officer forgot to sign the logbook when she first authorized Dukan to check out the samples. And in that case, maybe she went back after the fact and signed her initials to cover herself. But that doesn't make sense either. GP, Gloria Phillips, has a son who's terminally ill, and she's mostly been on leave taking care of him. She only worked one day last week. Otherwise, she hasn't been in the office at all. She couldn't have signed the logbook since O'Brien last saw the blank entries. So O'Brien considers another, more upsetting possibility. Then she flips through the logbook and gazes at another example of Phillips' initials from a while back. O'Brien knows that these ones are authentic, and she flips the pages back to the new initials and compares the two. At first glance, they do look the same, but the longer O'Brien stares at the new initials, the more she realizes they don't quite match. The handwriting is clearly different. Someone has forged these initials. And O'Brien believes she knows exactly who's guilty. From Wondery, this is episode 2 of Fraud in a Drug Lab from American Scandal. In our next episode, the investigation into Annie Dukan grows larger, and as the evidence piles up, Dukan finds she has nowhere left to hide. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to American Scandal ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. If you'd like to learn more about Andy Dukan and other scandals in science, we recommend the book The Ice Pick Surgeon by Sam Keen. This episode contains reenactments and dramatized details, and while in most cases we can't know exactly what was said, all our dramatizations are based on historical research. American Scandal is hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham, for Airship. Audio editing by Molly Bach. Sound design by Derek Behrens. Music by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written by Sam Keen, edited by Christina Malsberg. Our senior producer is Gabe Ribbon. Executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Marshall Louie for Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this, perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just 3 simple ingredients, popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.